to the blockchain.
Welcome to the Henny Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Saturday at 12.05 p.m. till about 1.30 p.m. with your latest in Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, talk, and more. Well, what happened this week? Last week, Crypto Spring broke out. And this week, it's in full Bitcoin bloom. It's another week, another hard fork, and this time it's Bitcoin Cash. And also, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman has launched the, quote, Virtual Markets Integrity Initiative, and Kraken Cryptocurrency says, I got your integrity initiative right here. And Amazon's Cloud Computing Division launches AWS blockchain templates. I know somebody here today that's going to have a lot to say about that. But I want to remind you, thank you all for coming out to the Bradenton Blockchain Business and Development Meetup on Wednesday at Connect Bradenton, and we'll be looking forward to the third Wednesday at 5:30 in May for our next one. Very successful, and I want to thank Greg Karch for coming down, the Alberto from RainCube, Jeremy from FairCar. And next Saturday will be the Bradenton Bitcoin and Cryptocurrency Meetup, which is the one that's been going on for quite a few months, also at Connect Bradenton. And we will have more to talk about that. I know a lot of people asked for something about exchanges and how to think about that and what's going on with that. We're going to talk about that and more then, and there's lots more to talk about here. But let's get right into introducing the panel that's here today. And, of course, opening his intro on the percussion on the desk is Augie. Augie, good afternoon.
Good morning, Henry. Oh, is it still morning? No, it's noontime.
No, it's morning in crypto world for the last 2 weeks.
M-O-U-R or just M-O-R?
No, it was M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G for 3 months, and now it's morning in America. It's a shining city on the hill built on cryptocurrency. As
save us from Ronald Reagan,
speaking
please.
Of shining. AKA Goldbug One, TradingView columnist, co-founder SeekingCryptos.com. Glad you could be here today.
I'm glad to be here, Henry. And I think it was more painful than it was in the last 3 months, and for at least those long-term investors, that's for sure.
Well, you know, it was near a bottom when my pastor gives a sermon about giving things up that are causing you too much distraction for Lent, and I listen to him. And sure enough, that pretty much called the bottom of it just about 2 weeks in advance. I'm happy for everything that came about from that sermon, and indirectly.
You were paid dividends in other means, huh?
Actually, it all worked out about the same. Because, you know, there's this place you can go, and not downtown. There's this.
It doesn't have to do with Verge, does it?
No. Don't go there. Not late this early in the show, anyway. Where you can find out lots about charting for cryptocurrencies, investments on even stocks and stuff like that. And
Seeking cryptos there, Henry.
Yeah.
You need to sign up yet. You need to sign up yet.
I've signed up twice, and you won't send me anything.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I got to get Mark on that.
Okay. Anyway, enough of that. We'll find out more about Seeking Cryptos and what's the latest up there very soon. But we have a very special guest in the studio today for the first time, although we've been acquainted indirectly online through some of the projects in the crypto space. But this is the first time she's actually been in the studio. First time I met her was at the Blockchain Business Meetup, and very appropriately she was there, because you'll find out more about that in a second. A financial woman. It's Kara Haas. She is a CPA and much, much more than that. She has been in the blockchain crypto world for quite a few years. She leverages years of experience serving the accounting and technology needs. Retailer, small business, has a passion for emerging technology, and helps projects and participants mitigate risk and thrive in evolving markets. She is specialties, and besides being a CPA and having her master's, point of sale, mobile phone applications, web applications, loyalty analysis, you should retain her.
I'm telling you, I was going to have to talk to her afterwards anyways.
Kara, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Henry. It's great to be here.
Yes, and she got the initiation to the wonders of the studio of WWPR, 1490 AM. And she didn't get a chance to experience it back when we had the old Commodore 64, but now that we got the new Packard Bell.
We've gone to 1968 here, so it's like, you know.
Yeah,
I can work with that. I have a soft spot for the Commodore 64.
Yes, and so we came in and... Now all we got to do is figure out who stole the cable from the back of the computer, and we'll be good. But so anyway, we'll move on and put that behind me. I'm not obsessing on it by any means whatsoever, and we'll get into the things that happened this week. We'll get more from Kara in the second half of the show. We're really going to dive into businesses and blockchains and Amazon and their blockchain initiatives, Andy.
And what about IBM? Are we going to dive into IBM?
IBM. Was there anything happening in IBM last week?
It was brutal, but, you know, I mean, yeah, we'll talk about it later.
Yes, we will. I tell you, I've got news for you. I'm playing all the liners. We haven't had a chance to play all these in a long time.
At least you're not playing Tom Petty's Free Falling, that's for sure.
I got to get that one. I was getting tired of Ring of Fire. Yeah. Bitcoin hit a four-week high in Asia hours ago.
Now let me ask you, how do you ever get rid of get old of Johnny Cash? I mean, I don't understand that. One of the great artists of all times.
I just got tired of
hearing
that.
It over and over.
Yeah, I mean, I could play Going to Jackson or something like that, or Folsom Prison Blues, but it really wouldn't fit what we're talking about. But as you lose 60% to 70% of your value, yeah, it seems sort of appropriate.
You only lose if you sell, Henry. You only lose if you sell.
Yeah. Unless it goes all the way to zero and you've never sold, then you're able to passively lose everything you have.
You know, it's really kind of odd, because it's perfect explanation what happens to the markets. When it's up at 18,000, nobody sells. It gets down to 6, everyone panics and sells instead of just holding on. Does it matter if it's at 6,000 or 16 if you're long term?
Yes.
No, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because
you're assuming it won't go to zero.
Well, then that's the risk you got
to
take. If you go into something that's this risky, you should be saying,
"You see a change in direction."
I'm going to ride it to zero, no matter what. That's my mentality.
Yeah. Well.
It's like a bull riding. You know, you have 8 seconds of fun, and then the rest of it you're dodging bulls.
Not that, as I said last week, I wished ill for all the other crypto investors, but there was a certain satisfaction, guilty as it was, of the market going lower after I went to cash, because it went up right after I went to cash, but then it went significantly lower, and I was able to see the turnaround and get in, and I walked back in at about the same spot I was, and we'll go into some of the other stuff after that. Let me get to the actual news here. Bitcoin hit a four-week high in Asia hours ago, but continued to underperform compared to alternative cryptocurrencies. Having scaled a long-term bearish trend line, the world's largest cryptocurrency rose to 9,021 at 7:30 UTC. I now know what UTC time is, and we're actually 4 hours behind.
I thought it was United Technologies, but
UTX. They invented it.
I was like, would they?
If you go there, it's on all the clocks. Whatever state they're in, it all has the same time so that they all eat lunch and go to the bathroom at the same time. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious, really. And anyway, 7:30, so that was about 4 hours earlier here, 3:30 in the morning, which actually is about the time I finished the show prep this week.
I was going to say, because I saw your text at 1 a.m., and I'm going, wow, Henry's up before me. That's odd.
Well, and then I saw your text at like 4-something about the Amazon story. Read the last two paragraphs. I'm like, on my phone. I was the one that put it in the rundown. Anyway, so Bitcoin's underperformance could be an indication that cryptocurrency is fueling the rise in altcoins. However, altcoins are traded against Bitcoin, so investors pouring into the crypto markets tend to buy Bitcoin first and then rotate the money into altcoins. The Bitcoin dominance rate moved from 45%+ to 37%, which might be indicative of that. What do you think of that, Andy? You think that's what happened?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I'm not even sure what you said there, Henry. You ran over it so damn fast. I'm just going to say, yes, Bitcoin went up. That's what happened.
Oh, you weren't even listening.
I was trying to pull up a chart here.
Yes. Well, that'll be helpful. So let me restate it, because as the radio mentor of mine that is passed on to the great studio in the sky where all the cables are plugged in once told me, he goes, tell people what you're going to tell them, then tell them, and then tell them what you told them. So we've gotten to tell people what we were going to tell them. I told them, and now I'm going to tell Andy what I just told you all. So the writer of this article is saying that because Bitcoin has lagged altcoins, with Bitcoin Cash going up 40%, some of the other ones, Stellar, Ripple, it's because people are buying the Bitcoin and moving it into altcoin, rotating in. Bitcoin's up about 20%. My thoughts are different, but let's hear your thoughts.
I think some of these altcoins were down, 90%, 75-90%, which is a huge drop as opposed to Bitcoin, which was down, 60%?
Yeah.
Something like that, 60%. So, I mean, to see the altcoins come back in a furious form. But you still have to have a buyer and a seller, so I don't buy into that. I mean, you still have to buy. Somebody's buying the Bitcoin, going out of vaults to Bitcoin, or it's a trade neutral position. So I don't buy into that. The only thing I could
into the fact that the drop was greater on the altcoins.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's incredibly insightful, because that's my opinion too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would think more that if Bitcoin was going up, it would be because people are buying Bitcoin to transfer it over to the exchanges than to buy the altcoins. But again, it's traded in Bitcoin, so it's like, buying gold in U.S. dollars and thinking the dollar's going down because the people are buying gold, when it's a neutral trade. Someone's buying the dollar, someone's buying the gold.
Well, she's not here just to raise the average intellect of the studio here. We actually want to hear from her opinion. So, Kara, when did you first own crypto?
So I unfortunately FOMO'd in with the rest of the crowd. I became aware of it early on in about 2010, where it's difficult to purchase it today. It was even more difficult to purchase it when I first became aware of it. I had some contacts through my fraud examiner association that I knew how to get on the dark web, but I was still a little bit too cautious. So I just watched it a bit, played with some of the other alternative payments that came to market, like Diwala. And then I put it down to work on some larger projects that I had that weren't involved with Bitcoin, but continued to follow watching it more from a regulatory standpoint, how accountants were going to handle it. In 2014, 2015, I really started to pay attention to the research that was coming out. I've always had a pursuit or a dream to become a researcher, seeking a terminal degree in accounting. And once
did you say a terminal degree?
A terminal.
A terminal. SeekingTerminalAccountants.com.
I love it. I'm a secret domain squatter, too.
Then do we call you the late CPA, Cara? Or?
Yes. Well, hopefully there's no other educational pursuits after that is the goal of it. But as I continued to talk with different academics, some of my financial colleagues, I wasn't exactly dismissed, but nobody got excited or as excited about the topic as I was. So, of course, I backed away, watched it around the 600 mark, around the time that it was going to split, had this bad gut that it was going to go back down a little bit. So I held out, turned around, next thing you know, it's time to FOMO in around 8,000, 9,000.
That's not FOMOing in. I mean, that's, you know.
So that's probably October.
Yep.
As long as you didn't sell, you're fine. I mean, you know, you don't. Warren Buffett said it best. I mean, Warren Buffett said it. It's, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in the market the next month or two or even the next 6 months, but in 10 years, I know it's going to be higher. So you invest and you invest and you invest. And as long as you didn't go all in at once, you're okay.
That's it. I'm a big average in person.
There you go.
And a big holder.
Well,
so.
Then, yeah, no issues.
So I'm going to come back to this in a second, but I don't want to leave Augie out of this. Augie is the former contrarian, now the lunatic.
Because it's at 8,000 when it was at 18,000, and if you're going to get into a Ponzi scheme, this might be one of them. And which one is it, is the question. And what's most like a Ponzi scheme? Those who get in late get burned.
You are paying the returns to the initial investors from the people that bought. You're not paying returns on the investment. It's a commodity or a currency, depending on which regulatory body you are, but it's not a business that's paying returns on investment.
Right, but it's not an asset. That's the question.
Is it not an asset, or is that the question?
Well, yes, that is the question. Is it or isn't it? Right. Yes.
Yeah, well, I consider it an asset. I mean, it's an asset like anything else.
Right.
I mean, do you really? Let me ask you this, Augie. When you go to the bank, do you think they actually have the millions and millions of dollars that you have in that bank? And I know Augie has millions and millions of dollars in that bank. Do you think they actually have that sitting in the bank, or is it somewhere in digital land?
Most of my assets are in real estate, and so the value of the real estate goes up and down according to markets. Markets dictate everything, ultimately. I believe in markets, and if you don't believe in markets, you're kidding yourself. And if the market is betraying you from moment to moment, time after time, you have to be very wary of where you go with your money.
I think it's just a safety bet there.
And I think in the sake of full disclosure here, that the person to my right that is saying buy and hold also trades 30% of his portfolio in swing trades.
Well, yes and no. I mean, 30% is a 30% is a number. I'll tell you what, I can just tell you from this, and Augie can tell you this too, I'm sure he'll say the same thing, is that there's nothing like having cash when the market turns down. I don't care if it's the housing market, it's the gold market, or it's the crypto market or the stock market. So in times when the market's running up and it's a full bullish market, you want to be 100% invested. But as it starts to get to a top and you start to hit these important resistance levels, you start shaving off, and that's why we call it the 70-30.
Dropping more than you want to accept, then you go to cash and you go back in.
As a case in point, I screwed up. I could have bought a house for $100,000. I had it in my hands. I walked away. Yesterday or the day before, I saw the house sell for $475,000.
Well, I don't think it's going to go back to $100,000, but I know the market has turned soft this past month locally here.
We're seeing the signs.
Yeah, I've flirted with the idea of selling my house. And I know the comparable square foot sales have dropped about 8%. Plus, they've doubled the number of houses on my street that are for sale, which is not a good sign either.
Well, I can tell you, it's we're in the late stages of the market when you get a lot of restaurants, new restaurants coming open. And being in the engineering business for a long time, I could tell you, as soon as they start building restaurants, it's a sign that people, you know, have good sentiment, positive about the economy. They're too positive. And next thing you know, here comes the economy and it turns.
There's a glut of commercial.
Let's go back to Cara.
But Cara, when you're looking at what people are investing in, you're not telling them you made a bad investment, except at the end of your tax year, right? But you don't do taxes.
She tells them they made the best investment. They hired her.
Well,
I never judge anyone's choices or investments. My primary thing is to make sure that people aren't investing with money that they don't have. That is my primary goal.
That's a pretty good goal.
I definitely discourage them from...
You mean investing with money they have to invest?
I want them to, like, money to burn.
They can afford to lose. Okay.
Money they can afford to lose. Right.
Yeah. Or so that other people could afford to lose.
So that's usually my first goal and approach with everyone. And then those that are...
So if you're a CPA, you're not doing people's tax records, are you?
Right. I don't. I support other CPAs who may not have the resources to go to the different exchanges.
Where's your income coming from?
We got a late start here today because of the technical issue, so let's get back on.
Well, I think in order to understand where she's coming from, her income source isn't from people coming in doing their taxes.
We're
going
to go back to the topic that we need to get back to, which is the gist of the show, which is back to your cryptocurrency portfolio that we said we were going to be coming back to. So now in the extensive 6 months that you've had this portfolio, did you held all the way through?
I've held everything I purchased.
So you've added other currencies as you've gone along?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and you don't have to tip us off to exactly which ones unless you want to front run some currency.
I'm always no, I don't want to be accused of that, but I never have a problem. I'm a big fan of Augur and their reputation coin. I'm a big Monero girl and Ether.
Oh, so you're back on the dark web.
It's arm's length from the dark web. I'm just chasing the dark web participants.
Come to the dark side, Cara. The dark side.
Was there a time in the 6 months, because really 2 months into it, you saw the declines just over and over. Over half the time that you've been invested, it's been declining, really. Was there any time you just didn't buy anything? Or did you keep trying to buy the dip all the way dipping down?
No, I paused on the dip. The first two dips, I paused. And I took the general investor advice, don't buy on the dips, don't buy on the way down, let it bottom out. But it seemed like every Sunday night when the Asian markets would open, there was a beautiful dip. And I think maybe the third time, so it's been relatively recent. A little bit in February, a little bit just recently, maybe a couple weeks ago when it was.
So when the Asian markets open, which is right about the time you're shutting your mainstream clients down, you flip over and you put on your cryptocurrency hat.
I do. It's a fun time.
And then you told me that you're an early riser at 4 a.m. So what markets open at 4 a.m.?
Well, that's the tail end, essentially, of the Asian market. So there's usually a good window. You can see what things are happening around bedtime, 8, 9 p.m. And then 4 a.m., get a taste of what might happen between 4 and 8 a.m. A lot of times there'll be another decent dip right at the start of our day.
So now as an early morning trader like you are, are you like me where I'm in my underwear, I'm sitting there drinking coffee and eating pistachios?
Don't try to get a visual going here.
I mean...
He's in a Speedo.
I'm in my Speedo, my gold Speedo. And the pictures, the calendar's coming out soon, Henry. I'm letting you know, the calendar's coming out soon.
That's the day the numbers all fall off.
I am very close to that. I usually am prepared for a workout. I like to work out about 6, see if I may miss something right before my workout, flush it all out for my workout, come back right after the gym, and... Usually that's when I make my
decision. I thought she was like a Rocky fan, and she had taken the Rocky
I am such. I'm a Rocky fan. I'm a
drinking the
Mayweather
raw eggs and everything?
Outside of crypto. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. I'm a Schwarzenegger
fan. Well, I know
too,
on your Facebook page you got the boxing pictures there.
I do like boxing.
Yeah, she's got some guns on her there.
Look at that, for all you single men out there.
Now, is it boxing or kickboxing?
All. Boxing, kickboxing, and MMA, which once you try an MMA class, game over. You're there every day.
Okay, now I got to puff myself up here. Yeah. I was the very first ring announcer for any MMA match that was ever held in America.
Oh, tell far that out.
See?
Oh, we need to get you to the gym. So it's
no, I didn't. We'll talk about this later. No, serious.
It's so much more profitable than talking
you
about.
You know who Ken Shamrock
Mayweather
is?
I don't.
Okay, he was one of the first.
Shamrock was the bomb.
Yeah.
The Ken Shamrock. And that was
the sad thing is,
you hear
him talk now, and you know, he stayed in a little too long.
Well, that's what MMA was really MMA. I mean, there was two rules, no eye gouging and no groin grabbing. I think that was the only two rules.
Well, the initial, okay, we're going to, see,
we're
I told you not to digress, Augie. It's all your fault that we're doing this.
Well, that's what makes your show better.
I FOMO'd into MMA, too.
Okay.
So
back
woman,
around 1988, 89, I was promoting pro wrestling, and the Malenkos had a school in Tampa. There was a gentleman. Oh, this is going to go way too long. I'll just cut it down. So anyway, the before there was any MMA in the U.S., he had a connection because his, that was when Vince McMahon wanted the big steroid people. I mean, he still does, but that was really when it was. So guys like Malenko's sons, who were very skilled and had a real background, that were 5'8", 5'10", basically my size. They would go to Japan, and where the technical expertise was appreciated. So because that marketplace right around 1990-ish was looking for that, one of the groups spun off, and they created what we would now call MMA. The strikes had to be open hand, though, and you could only kick if you had the pads on your boots. But that was basically – and you couldn't do the groin or the eye gouging. So these guys that were wrestling on my show for like $20 or $25 would be able to go over to Japan, get it all expenses
paid. Okay, is there a Verge coin for that now?
it's probably – they probably get paid less than that now on these local shows. But anyway, in fact, in my business model back then, I should have made them pay me because I was putting them on TV. So, but that's water under the bridge. I digress from my digression. Anyway, so
how's Bitcoin doing this week, Henry?
Oh, it's great. Go to Seeking Cryptos. You don't need me to tell you. So, anyway, they would go, they'd be driving a Pepsi truck or something like that, and back in $1989, $1990, they'd get an all-expense trade trip to Japan, get paid $1,000 for one match, and then get flown back, and they'd do that once a month. Well, some of those people that were in those training at Tampa, that every Sunday they were having it, and I occasionally worked out with them, but I never competed with them, they went on to become UFC wrestlers, and a couple of them became champions, Ken Shamrock in particular, who was the nicest guy outside the ring, super gentleman. And he would tear – there was no practice with Ken Shamrock. I never got in the ring with him.
He was amazing. He was the one that did the sleeper, right? He was the one that made that –
No, that – well, he did pro wrestling.
Was it Shan – what was it? Dan
Severn?
Severn. Yeah, Dan Severn.
You don't mean a sleeper. You mean a choke.
Yeah, the chokehold, yeah.
Yeah. But –
And then there was Mark Smith. I mean, all these cool names, and you got Mark Smith. You're like –
All right.
Anyways.
Let's go to a break. And we will come back and try and get this show back on track. And thanks a lot, Augie.
If you're a business owner, you need to start listening right now to find out how a few feet of empty floor space can turn into a steady stream of both money and new faces into your business. Hosting a Bite Federal Bitcoin ATM gives you a leg up on your competition by giving your location a destination-oriented visitor that will come back time and time again. Frequent Bitcoin ATM customers become frequent shoppers in your storefront. To find out more, just call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E, or 877-855-2983, and you'll be talking to the same local business experts you've heard on the Henry Raines Show. Or just go to BYTEFederal.com and fill out the simple form to begin hosting a Bitcoin ATM in your business. Don't wait. Start earning new revenue and seeing new customers right away. Call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E. That's 877-855-2983, or go to BYTEFederal.com.
There's a new way to experience wellness. Hi, I'm Laura Alcover, owner and operator of Alcover Massage. We're the first business in Bradenton's Village of the Arts to accept cryptocurrency. Whether you use Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, or Litecoin, you can now pay for quality massage therapy using cryptocurrency at Alcover Massage. So if you seek medical massage or a relaxing session with light pressure, your session will be conducted by a talented therapist. You'll be glad you booked with us. Check out and like our Facebook page where you can book online in seconds. And remember to tell your friends. Give us a call, 941-592-3187. That's 941-592-3187. Alcover Massage, quality massage therapy in your neighborhood. MA number 50525, MM number 34081.
Hey, this is Brian. I listen to it every week. I really like it. Me and my wife, we just stop our cars every Saturday at 12 o'clock, make sure we listen to the show. It's great. I'm learning a lot about these cryptocurrencies. Keep on listening.
It's the Henry Raines Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. And we have Augie in the house, Andy, a.k.a. Goldbug1 in the house, special guest Kara Haas, CPA, and expert on all things business blockchain, and we'll be hearing more from her about relevant things like, you know, her favorite punching bag and stuff like that. Things that really tie into the meaning of the show. But I think I'm going to get
more profitable.
I'm going to give a heads up to the audience because I think we're justified in this. Since we had some technical issues getting started, we're going to run past 1:30 today. I don't think anybody's going to. Anybody has to be anywhere. Yeah, you're practically a man of leisure now, Andy.
Yeah. I am a man of leisure.
Okay, so trying to bring this back to where we were. What's happening with Bitcoin, Andy?
Well, I'll tell you what.
What's happening at SeekingCryptos.com first?
I got to take it off to Gillian and Mark. They made some good calls there, and we've made some nice calls. But Bitcoin, whenever you get a nice rounded bottom like that, and all of us men love rounded bottoms, so you got to think things are going up, and they did, but they did surpass our expectations.
Women like saggy bottoms.
I don't know. Let's go to the expert, Kara.
No, definitely
rounded bottoms. Okay, so everybody's in a
it's universal.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone loves rounded bottoms, but yeah, we shaved off a while ago. I think we were around 7,800, but. This is definitely an area where you want to start covering your longs if you're trading.
What does that mean?
You close out your trade positions to the long side and just let things pull
so
back.
So if you've made a profit, you're taking profit.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no reason not to take a profit here.
You don't see from my much simpler analysis, I'm not the expert with all the technical expertise, so I'm looking at a much basic level. I even thought maybe it was Mark P. Marcus that was saying it. He knows some of his stuff, too.
Absolutely.
That if we went past 8,700, of course, maybe it was just CoinDesk I was reading. What do they know? 8,700, that the next resistance is going to be 9,200, and we seem to be consolidating around 8,800. So if you're there, why wouldn't you hold and...
Well,
wait, put your stop in below the 8,700?
You know, like Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Take your money and run. You know, I mean, at this point, this is not an area where you want to be.
How is that giving to Caesar?
Gambling. Lender unto Caesar. You know, it's the old thing in the market. Left the last 10% of the market. Leave that to the herd. I mean, you're better off getting 10. You're better off getting out 10% lower. You're never going to time the tops and bottoms. You're better off getting out 10% lower than the high. Then watching it go to the high, and especially, and this is a You're glad you made a good point here, because I want to bring this up. Whenever you have a solid move like this, where it's a very vertical run, it's normally followed by a hesitation at a resistance level and a big pullback. The harder it runs up, the more it pulls back. So I would be more inclined to see it pull back here. And actually, we posted this morning, we had a target level of 88.55 to 89.86 in there, and it kind of just went a little bit above that. But until it pulls back into the 75s, the 78s levels, I'm not a buyer here. I mean, I'm long-term, so my portfolio is still in the market. And that's the great thing about having a long-term portfolio. You let it ride. You get the big swings. If it continues to 12, 13,000, I'm fine. You know, I'll look for better trade setups elsewhere. It's never wrong having a little bit of cash on the side, and I like sitting on cash on the side, because when the deals come, if you're all in the market, you're really hurt. You're like, ah, then you're selling something to buy something, and then it just, it's a, you know, it starts a domino effect. So right now, if you're long, I would be, you know, I'd be trimming off some profits, at least reducing risk at this point.
Cara, are you adding to your portfolio?
I'm waiting at the moment. I'm looking to add. I've got, like Andy said, the cash on the side.
So let me give a hypothetical then. So he's talking about waiting for the market to pull back and buying in when you consider there's less risk. Other people, myself mostly.
Oh, you're not the only one, Henry.
Like to buy on a breakout through resistance. Mm-hmm. Do you have a strategy either way on that?
I really my head tells me I should follow your strategy, but it's an irrational market, so I'm doing a little bit of my gut.
Why does your head tell you to follow me? He's got the 30,000 followers.
Well, without a doubt. After this, I'm restructuring my entire strategy, thanks to Andy.
By the way, I have two followers on TradingView.com.
There you go, buddy.
I have never written anything there.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point about the breakout, and that was made popular by Darvas. If anyone knows who Darvas is, he was a ballet. He was a big ballerina, or I don't know what they call the male ballerinas.
Dancer.
Ballet dancers, okay. And he turned like 5,000 into, 200 in like 18 months or something, but they call it the Darvas box. And that's exactly.
That guy on CNBC who always does those commercials, right?
Well, maybe. You know, I don't know. This is, you know, 7 years back. But anyways.
He's about 7 years old.
Okay. Well, then maybe it's him. But anyways, you made a good point about buying the breakouts, but it's where you buy the breakouts that's key, and that's where a lot of new traders go make a mistake. You see a breakout at a resistance level a lot of times, and I want to say 60% of the time or more, it pulls back what they call a throwback, and it moves lower. That's why, you know, people post in triangles and all that. You got to watch where you're buying the breakout.
I need to do
that's just as important as the breakout here,
because I said something last week. And then afterwards, I totally reversed myself on my personal behavior in the crypto world.
I got to hear this.
Well, I told you that I had I was experimenting with the margin on Kraken. Because most people still, I would say, are on Coinbase, and there's a very limited amount what you can do with Coinbase. Plus, they're skimming 5% to 10% in and out, depending. You know, you look at the buy and ask spread, it's about 5% sometimes.
That's crazy.
And then they have their fee on top of that. So Kraken has very low fees. It's hard to get fiat in and out. You have to be verified at, like, level 4 or something. So, you know, I wind up moving stuff from Coinbase onto Kraken and then having to move it back. But all the trades in between are done on Kraken. Well, anyway, Kraken,
Taxable since it's overseas?
Pardon me?
Is that taxable because it's overseas?
Kraken's a U.S. exchange.
Oh, I thought it was a U.K. exchange.
No.
Oh, okay.
If you're U.S., it's taxable.
Oh, damn it.
Well, it's taxable over there, out of the country too. But anyway,
doesn't matter where
they
exchange
don't know,
it.
What they don't know, don't hurt them.
But I said, you know, I tried the 2-for-1, 2-to-1 margin, and I got out of it. Or no, and then I looked at it, and I'd see if it would let me buy 4-to-1, and it scared me so much I got out of it right
that's
away.
Crazy.
I lost that fear about a day later. And so my Ethereum is at a 4-to-1 margin, although now it's 2-to-1. Because
so it's running?
Yeah.
So you're long?
On Ethereum, yeah.
You're long on Ethereum? And did you cover yet?
No, but they force you to close the position in 28 days anyway.
Oh, okay.
So I'm about 6 days into it now. But
it's a long time to go there, Henry. And
well, I'll close it when I
You want me to sign on for you right here?
No.
And we can close it right now. Just lock in those profits, Henry. Lock in those profits.
It's moved 25%, and it's up 100%.
And for all you new traders out there, this is exactly what you
don't do. What I say. Don't do what I do. Do what I say. And of course, this is another thing that's out there, and I'm not suggesting anybody in the U.S. do it because they don't want you to do it unless you're outside of the U.S. But I was looking at that Deribit.com, that options exchange where you can do Bitcoin options, and all of a sudden after that run yesterday, the spread between what would normally be like an $1,100 option, like say an $8,000 call on Bitcoin, the spreads were like $500 or $600.
A lot of volatility. Okay.
And you really look, the market just isn't liquid enough there. I'll wrap this up in
because
I had a friend that asked me, should I put 10 Bitcoin on there? And I said, 10 Bitcoin, you'll be a whale on that market, and you won't be able to do it. And now that I see what happened yesterday, you wouldn't.
Well, you know,
it's
an interesting thing you put up about the options, because see, that's one thing that prevents you. That's one of the reasons why you want to cover quicker, is because you can't do an options trade. If if this was a normal market and I seen a move like this, instead of selling my Bitcoin out at the resistance level, I would actually go short some call options and sell calls into it to a little bit, maybe a little bit above, and hey, pulls back, I keep the premium. If it moves higher, I'm in.
So let me just skim the headlines here so we can get to the blockchain part of the show. And speaking
of... Is there a blockchain part of the show?
Well, that was why Cara's here. I told her that you had an important discussion for her about Amazon's blockchain and IBM's blockchain, and why the world is prejudiced against IBM, except for you.
They are prejudiced.
New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman launched the Virtual Markets Integrity Initiative, an inquiry into the policies and practices of digital currency trading platforms, according to a press release April 17. As part of the initiative, letters were sent to 13 major cryptocurrency exchanges requesting information on their operations, internal controls, other key issues. They said it's just a three-page questionnaire. Their approach to fighting market manipulation, operation of bots, uses of non-public trading. It's one of those three page questionnaires that probably generates 30 or 300 pages of responses. But Kraken was one of the exchanges that received it, Gemini, Coinbase, even some of the ones like Binance, which I thought could probably tell them to. Does Binance, you're on Binance, right? Or you know somebody on Binance, right?
Yes.
Do they ask you what country you're in when you sign on?
You know what? They know what country you're in. It automatically.
Yeah, but do they ask?
I don't remember. I'll be honest with you. I don't think so.
Okay. Because I'm looking at the list of 13, and about a third of them are foreign exchanges, and I'm wondering what kind of compliance they got. But within the U.S., there's Bittrex, there's Kraken that received the letter, Coinbase, GDAX, Gemini, Poloniex, which is now owned by Circle. The Goldman Sachs startup. Well, Kraken had a different point of view on this. In contrast to the other cryptocurrency exchange, which all put out statements, oh, we're happy to comply. We're all about getting a safe marketplace for our customers. Jesse Powell, the CEO of Kraken, said, this resource diversion for the production is massive. Massive three-page questionnaire. I guess he probably has figured out that this is going to completely blow up our roadmap. Powell says on Twitter. By the way, Cara, how many of your businesses you help say, we got our roadmap?
We like everyone to have a roadmap 5 years before they say they have a roadmap.
Can't they just go buy a business GPS or something? That's you, right?
I guess that is. That's my new nickname on the roadmap.
Okay. So anyway, Jesse Powell said that on Twitter about the roadmap. Then he continued, then I realized we made a wise decision to get the hell out of New York 3 years ago, that we can dodge this bullet. Ordinarily, we'd be happy to help government understand our business. However, this is not the way to go about it. They back 3 years ago, New York had the Bit license. They still do. They had to comply. And the Kraken said, never mind, New York. We just won't do business there. And
Leave it to a state like New York to regulate, over-regulate stuff.
That's why they're so unsuccessful.
That's why they're still in debt.
Well, it's working pretty well for the New York Stock Exchange, actually. moving on to what Andy was saying about as the market develops and there's actually in the U.S. options, which I guess we have the CBOE, Chicago Board of Options Exchange, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Well, one of the lesser-known ones is Ledger X, which was really the first one to offer Bitcoin options. They have increased their weekly trades to 7.5 million options, which actually I think compares pretty good with the big boys and girls of at CBOE and CME. So that has currently 2,000 contracts are open interest, which I think that's a bigger number than the other ones.
Yeah.
And
are we going to get into some questions for Kara in terms of tax liability and things like that?
No, not right now. I think we're past tax day.
I was just going to say December
15th. I want to go back to pegging my workouts to the price of Bitcoin.
Well, yeah, now that's something we can get into. Anyway, there's a thing in here that from Ledger X that says, you know, we're just trying to make this. Our traders are younger, relatively newer traders, more traditional ones. And they have a 90 individual and institutional trader base doing all those contracts. But they got to be certified. They got to have $200,000 cash or a couple million dollars net worth. How many young traders are there like that? I guess
there's probably a few in this.
Yeah,
market.
I guess up to 90. So, let's see. We have let's
go on to IBM and Amazon.
I got to get to this one. So, Angel's List. Are you familiar with Angel's List, Con?
I'm not.
Angel's List is a website for startups offering job vacancies. And it is an inverse correlation to the price of Bitcoin, because when Bitcoin was at 20,000, there were only 500 cryptocurrency jobs listed. When it hit 7,000 in February, the number of jobs listed were double at 1,000. So there's a high demand for that. And you know there's a high demand because Mark Capellas, the former CEO of the hacked Bitcoin exchange Mt. Gox, who was held in jail for nearly a year in Japan, has a brand new job. He is going to be the chief technical officer for the Denver-based VPN service provider London Trust Media. Now, that's a virtual private network, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a real trustworthy network, I'll tell you that much.
That's like network on the down low?
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, well, this is still in the process of being tried in Japan, so he has to work remotely. And according to Carpellis, it's currently my main job after being confronted with his information on his own LinkedIn page by Fortune magazine.
Cryptocurrency is attracting the outlaws. You got John McAfee, and now you got this guy. I mean, what is it with cryptocurrencies that's attracting all these outlaws?
Well, he's got some investment advice for you.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
Bitcoin right now is, I believe, doomed. Its original promise of being the future of currency is clearly out of reach. And he goes on. Let's go to the wrap-up of this. Oh, one more thing. There's a Bitcoin Cash hard fork coming up.
I did not know about that.
I didn't either. And all the people talking on CNBC about get back into Bitcoin Cash for this reason and that reason, none of them mentioned this. And
that explains a lot about the spike, because that thing was crazy.
Yeah, last week it was EOS.
$600.
And I got a quick education about setting up an ERC-20 wallet and moving my stuff in there and out of there and not taking advantage of the whole thing, other than I know a little bit more about doing that now. Let's go to Brian Kelly, where he wraps up the week. And this was actually from Thursday, so he didn't even have the latest run-up. You're listening to WWPR, 1490 AM, Bradenton, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay. And after this, we'll get into the blockchain stuff.
The crypto universe coming back with a vengeance this month. Check out some of the coins in the space surging. Ripple up 50%. Ethereum and Bitcoin Cash up more than 40%. And Litecoin and Bitcoin are up around 20%. This as the total crypto market cap hits a four-week high, now back above $350 billion. And our own crypto baller, BK, here says Bitcoin is now testing a key technical level. He's over at the Plasma with a special crypto class. Hi, B.
Hey, how are you? Yeah, so we're having a big week here. Obviously, a lot of nice bounce off the bottom. So let's see what's driving it here and then what we should look for over the next couple of weeks. Number one, tax selling. That's over. If you haven't paid your taxes by now, you're in trouble. Number two, number of transactions increasing. I was here last week. You asked me, what is the single thing that we need to see to have this rally continue? We need to see transactions on the Bitcoin network increasing. That's beginning to happen. That's the fundamental support we need. And then number two, there's a fair amount of cash on the sidelines. Funds that I talk to have a fair amount of cash. They don't have as much Bitcoin. So we need some sort of catalyst to break us out of this and to get that cash out. So let's take a look at the chart.
And we'll see if Andy agrees with Brian Kelly here on CNBC in just a moment.
And see what we've got here. So taking a look at the chart. This is a log chart. In Bitcoin, people use a log chart, log on the scale, because the big moves, this kind of normalizes the big moves. So log chart, since June, you see we have this big run up here, okay? Right to the top, that peak was 19,000. Now we have a downtrend. You can see I have the downtrend there. Very well defined, as Carter Worth would say. And look at where we are right now. Whoop, there's a nice arrow right there. Well, maybe it's not. Look at where we are right now. Right on the trend line. That's about 8,500. So if we can break this trend line, this week, with all this fundamental support, tax selling gone, cash on the sidelines, number of transactions increasing, we're going to turn that arrow upside down. And I think we go higher if we can break out.
And I have to tell you, because I don't know if you looked at the video on this, but this was the most out of scale chart, because it mainly had, and now I'm talking on the radio showing them a line, and so if picture like a 45 degree line or even a 60 degree line, just with little wiggles up to the peak at December, and then take another line with maybe at a 45 degree angle down to the low point in March.
They probably used a line chart and did like a weekly or a monthly, so
yeah,
it looked like
so
that.
You don't see that parabolic move from November through December, and you don't see the big drops and slight retracements and the big drops all the way down to this point. But you will, but it does fit what he is looking at on his TV screen will fit his explanation.
Thanks, Ryan. You were nervous when we were going to ask you that, though. You were nervous.
It's a, you know, it's a scary place to be at.
It really is, and I don't usually sit over.
Welcome back.
Not too long ago, you were pitching Bitcoin Cash as an opportunity. It's gone up. What do we do?
I think you hold on to it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the entire space has gone up here. Bitcoin Cash. If you think about it this way, one of my friends was saying, if you got Bitcoin Cash this year for free, which you did in a fork, and you had to raise some money for taxes, you'd probably sell Bitcoin Cash and keep your Bitcoin. So it was probably the most susceptible to tax selling. And so now I think you're seeing that kind of beach ball under the water popping up.
So, BK, when you look at Bitcoin or you look at the currencies, when you play blockchain, what's the best way to play blockchain off of this? Because that's what's going to stick around whether or not you pick the right currency. Blockchain will always be there. I think everyone agrees on that.
Yeah, so there are a couple equity plays that you can do, enterprise blockchain. IBM isn't a pure play, but they have, you know, that's one way to play it. I certainly think, you know, if you want to kind of play the adoption of Bitcoin, Square is another way to do it. They mentioned in their...
Say that one again.
Square.
Okay.
You've heard of it, right? Yeah. I think you bought it at one. So I think there are different ways to play it. The other way you can play it, again, are through the chip companies, and that's for the mining of this whole thing.
Brian, when you're talking to institutions, though, it seems like the altcoins have outperformed the mega caps in Bitcoin. It's all relative. What do institutions want to do here? Because, you know, clearly the wave we saw in November and December was altcoins were massively outperforming because everyone wanted to kind of roll down the curve.
Yeah.
What's going on now?
Yeah, so it's a good point, Tim, because what you're seeing is this rotation. Bitcoin is somewhat stuck here, but you're seeing some other high-quality coins, Ethereum, EOS, some of the larger cap coins, getting a bid here. And I think we're going to see this year a real divergence in quality. You're going to see maybe 10 different coins that are going to really get all the money, and then the other 1,000 or so are going to go to zero.
Got a real quick question for you. Of the chip names, since we started off the night with Chipwreck, tell me the chips that have the biggest, best exposure in this
Taiwan
world.
Semi. Even though they had TSM, even though they got killed on smartphones today. So NVIDIA, AMD, those are two ways to play it.
Right.
But Taiwan Semi makes the ASICs, the application-specific integrated circuits. You knew that, right? They have the ASICs that that all the big miners use, and that's the best way to play them.
Okay. So what do you say, Andy? Are you tax selling? Is that what we were waiting for? What do you? What's the turnaround?
No, you know, I think people always want to pinpoint some, you know, they want to look to an event, and that's just kind of a thing that people do. And believe me, Brian knows better. But for the audience on CNBC, they're looking for an answer, and there's an easy one. Oh, it's the people selling for tax. That's why it's going down. People are always looking for an answer, and that's not, in my belief, and I know we've discussed this on our things, it's all sentiment related. When people are positive about something, they invest, they buy. When nothing has changed fundamentally, and really nothing's changed fundamentally, what's the reason for the price movement? It's personal sentiment. It's public sentiment. So it's just like with gold and stocks and anything else. It has nothing to do with fundamentals. It has to do with public sentiment.
It has fundamentals of the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely.
What people are willing. Augie is shaking his head. He's chomping.
My balls are falling and my head's shaking so hard. I think that sentiment sounds lovely, but it's nonsense. Markets are markets. If you can't sell your products to a market within your country because your markets are too high, you have to go out of the country to do the sale. Your market locally is going to go to crap. So if your markets are going to crap in your country, it's affecting everything. The stocks are affecting Bitcoin. Everything's and now you indicated real estate's in a soft situation. You're thinking of not selling, Henry, because of the condition of the real estate market.
Actually, I'm thinking of not selling because I still got to go to England for my daughter's redo of her wedding for the family over there.
Do you have a mortgage?
I've got a line of credit that I did some fixing up with, but
well,
no,
you're
I really
going to go at 5.5% now.
Pardon me?
You're at 5.5%.
No, that's about where it was when I started.
Well, then you're going to stay there or go higher, because that's where the interest rates are going to dictate everything. Sentiment aside,
the amount of paying on my line of credit is less than I would pay for a homeowners association in the local condo. So.
Well, I think that's fine. You got your.
Plus, I'm getting rich on crypto.
Well,
come on.
All right, fine.
If not that, my options on IBM are going to pay off.
Well, there you go. You got all the answers.
I got it covered.
You're covered. Good. Good for you. But Kara, when
Uber's hiring.
When these trades happen, where are people in these trades? And since real estate is still a deduction and all of the rest, they've not killed that off.
Into the mic, please.
Pardon?
Into the mic, please.
Right. So anyway, all I'm getting at is when people are making trades in real estate, the like-kind exchange allows them to continue doing that. So what's happening with this?
I understand he wants to turn and look at Kara. That's why I put her over there. So
I don't blame him. She's been smiling this
mic.
Whole time. I mean, what?
I'm thinking that I could position the microphone without making it make noise, but I think that would be worse.
I made noise because he grabbed the mic away from me because he's so hot to look for you. But that's all right. That's Andy now I'm talking about.
Well,
of course, you're not doing that, Andy.
My answer will probably please, Andy, disappoint you. I know you so desperately want tax answers out of me, but most of my tax colleagues have had a time of just keeping up with the tax law changes. The last federal tax return that I prepared was 2010. So I have not kept up with all the tax changes. I do not believe that the dips and the subsequent run-up that we've seen has anything to do with tax sell-off, without a doubt. If we were looking for that at all, that narrative would have fit better. I believe Japan had their tax day in mid-March, and maybe we saw a little bit of a dip. But it again is we're all searching for the narratives that we at least are familiar with history, trying to plug it back into this. I think most people who owe taxes right now either have accepted some interest and penalties. They're not letting go of crypto to take care of the Fed.
So as long as they don't sell, they're okay.
As long as they don't sell or alternate within the markets, because so even if you're exchanging for alt, that's not a like-kind exchange.
Mm-hmm.
At least I believe.
But is a like-kind exchange allowable now?
Well, we've had shows about what the actual rules are on this. People
this
are either going to be.
Expert that we brought in.
Well, I had two experts already.
The last expert, Peter, I believe.
Okay.
He definitely understands individual tax far better than me. I can tell you, if you paid your employees with tokens, I can tell you what the payroll tax liability is.
Oh.
That's about the extent of my tax liability, and just on my own personal Schedule B.
Okay. So either. As an individual, they're going to comply with the tax law,
or they're
going to cheat on it.
Yeah, or they're going to cheat.
I, for one, am totally compliant for my trades last year. I filed an extension.
No comment here.
Well, I've heard somebody say they can get by with not doing anything about it. I've heard that said in the studio.
That wasn't me.
That wasn't me either, Mr. Taxman.
It was... Who was that person, Augie? Let's hang on. Get Crime Busters on the line.
The last time she did taxes was 2010. You know, last time she did taxes was 2010. I think that's the last time I filed taxes. Hey, as long as you don't sign, I honestly think this is above. You know, they can't get you for falsifying a tax return, right? Am I wrong there? No, that's all they can say is you didn't claim, here's what you owe. I mean, that's pretty much what they do.
They will eventually come for you and just say, here's your bill.
Here's your
bill.
And
if you'd like to discuss it, go ahead and throw up on it.
That's when I write a check. That's it, you know.
I have a friend that I don't think has filed for like over 20 or 30 years.
You know, I have an uncle that's like that. He hasn't paid property taxes either.
And now he's approaching 60.
He actually fought
and he doesn't have any Social Security in the pipeline.
That is a downside.
Yes,
not
it is.
Not complying. Yes, indeed.
Well, you know, it's a downside if you didn't save your money.
Okay. I have a little bit of theories on this to get us into the blockchain, but I want to play this piece from Bloomberg as the setup. It's only about 50 seconds. Barclays is one of the banks that's exploring having a cryptocurrency trading desk, and I think there was another big bank, a U.S. bank, that was exploring it. So there's lots of headlines with all the other discussions we had over the past couple of weeks and the Innovation Summit, et cetera. We haven't really had all the headlines of all these big players waiting in the wings with different projects. And part of it is I want you to listen to the Bloomberg people talking about this and their whole attitude about – because this is a serious story – Barclays really is thinking about this. I think they clear the options, too, for the CME and the CBOE. You say, yeah, say yes. I'm pretty sure.
Maybe.
Yeah, just say it with authority. It must be true.
It is true.
Anyway, let me play their attitude to this as far as a big player getting into the crypto space.
He's just talking to his customers saying, well, do you think we should be trading some in cryptocurrency? So another big bank maybe dipping its toe in the water.
Maybe is right, and they've come out in response to this story and said it's, you know, they assess client interests all the time, and this may be something they're looking at. Look, they would be the first European bank to do this, so obviously it would generate huge interest if they were to go into it. And I guess, you know, look, we had the era of Casino Bob. Maybe this is going to be, I don't know, Crypto Jets. It doesn't quite have the same ring to it, but it kind of works. But look, we talked about Barclays yesterday on the show. They have this activist investor. Jeff Daly, he's very keen to use the investment bank to ramp up the shareholder returns for Barclays. So this could be an area for them. Look, it's a big market. There's a lot of interest in it. A lot of hedge funds would like the banks to be doing more in crypto. So maybe.
It's like a start. It's like, let's see what works. Let's try it. Okay, that worked. Let's do that.
Poor Jeff Daly. Come on. He's doing his best.
They do mention a big thing that the banks that do evolve or what am I thinking? What's the word I'm looking for? Anyways.
Adapt.
Thank you. Thank you, Augie. Are going to be the ones that succeed. And it's just like any other transformation. You either adapt or you perish. And some of these banks, like the Dutch Bank, which is just...
I was thinking people might call Augie a dinosaur, but he is. He's a thesaurus.
I love Augie.
People almost as old as me.
Beware, I don't share the love.
people don't even know what a thesaurus is anymore. I should have just kept my mouth shut.
Anyways, I think a lot of these banks, this is a new means for them. And I'll tell you what, I don't know if you saw Goldman Sachs' earnings report. You read those? Anybody else ready to go?
No, I mean, that was a couple of big.
They're getting into retail investors, and it goes right along with their acquisition of Circle.
Right.
Now they're going to retail investors, which was kind of their thing. We're only for the rich and elite, and now they're going after the retail investors. And you kind of see this Goldman Sachs.
IBM, like when you first started the show here, Bank of America had patented cryptocurrency
absolutely.
Exchange.
30-some, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
They have like 30-some patents
getting ready
in there.
For
so they're all getting ready for it. It's definitely going to be a transformation. You either adapt or you're going to perish. And I think as shareholders, they want them to do that. I mean, they can get on front and center on TV and say all they want. But shareholders want revenue, and if they don't get revenue and earnings, then they're going to uprise.
Well, my thoughts pretty much parallel what we've been saying. If all these institutions, whether the hedge funds, as you talked about, that can't short and can't do all these different hedging strategies, as they saw Bitcoin getting up into 20,000, there was no sensible reason for them to put this money on the sideline. We talked about that one investor who had announced the venture capital fund, and he pulled back from it. Oh, that was a few months ago. So, and then it turns. They can see the downtrend. They're not going to go in and try and catch a falling knife on that. And they're looking at the technical analysis. When was this turnaround? When does this turn around? You can listen to Brian Kelly or whoever you want on CNBC telling you these different inflection points where then you'll know. Well, either you're holding and you're going through all that, or you're like me, you hold until you can't hold any longer and you go to cash and you're waiting for an inflection point. But it's a lot easier for somebody like me to move my little bit of money back into the market and use some of these strategies to try and goose it to get a jump start on it than for these people that have been sitting on millions of dollars
mm-hmm.
to move back in. And now I think what we're going to see, the inflection point that a lot of them were talking about was the previous high was around 7,200 or 7,400 before the last low. Some people came back and then they were looking at right above the 8,000 mark, around 8,200 as being the point. Well, we've passed both those points now, and now there's an awful lot of money on the sideline that these people, the big fish, the whales, have to decide, do we get it now or do we fear a miss out and the other whales come in and get this at the better price than us? Because it's more difficult than the stock market where you can do block trades, where you can periodically average over time into the market because there's a lot of liquidity.
Jamie's going to set the trend all over again. You know that. What did he do the last time?
You're talking about Jamie Dimon.
I love Jamie Dimon.
So what do you think, Andy, before?
You know, I mean, you bring up a good point, and someone said on TV, I saw it, maybe a week ago, I think it was the CEO of Coinbase, and he said that the reason that big money's not coming in is because of regulations and how are they going to handle it and insurance. And it's a bunch of bull. The reason they're not coming in is because you cannot hedge against something like this. When something runs from 6,000 to 19,000 like we saw, you're stuck in a trap where you go, do I sell and take the tax hit? Or do I ride out the storm and hope it doesn't go down as low as it would
hope
have been for the tax hit?
Two more weeks so it can be in the next tax
right.
year.
That's right. So, and I was in that situation. I said, well, hopefully it doesn't go below 13, 10, I'll hold on because if it goes below that, then it was worth me selling for the tax liability, take the tax loss to be able to buy back in cheaper. People don't take that into account, but you should. But the big thing is you can't hedge against it. If I was getting towards the tops of that, then I could sit there and say, just like you would with a stock, I could go, I'm going to short some calls against my position. And if it goes higher, I've locked in those profits. I'm fine with that. And I can either cover the loss at that point and pay the loss, write that loss off my taxes, or I can sit there and let them assume the stock or let them take take delivery on it. Or if it pulls back, then I made the money on the call spread. So until you get some more products in there that allow you to be able to short and other mechanisms for doing this, like options and stuff like that, and obviously the futures was the first step, but that's not a very liquid market, and the spreads are obviously not as bad on the CBOE and CME is what you're talking about, but the spreads are still at a point where hedge funds and that can don't find it profitable.
And at that period of time where I went to cash, the show right before that, which when I hit the sermon, I was like, yeah, that's me right now. I'm putting too much thought into this. Is I said, because Kraken will let you short, I was both equivalent amounts long on Bitcoin and short on Bitcoin just because I didn't want anything to change while I wasn't looking.
So you locked it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that. I mean, there's, yeah, but those exchanges are not stable. And it's all it's going to take is one big short squeeze. And we had one recently. Wait till one of those exchanges gets wiped out and can't cover the margins, and then people start pulling their money out. That's when you're going to start seeing a lot of regulations come in, and you're going to see someone like NASDAQ, and I wish to God NASDAQ would get in there and open up an exchange, come in and take over this space. And, you know, Coinbase, well, as far as I'm concerned, is garbage.
Yesterday when the Bitcoin was running and all the different coins were running, the day before when we had that nice bump up and it was like, oh, it's over with now, and then the following day, when I don't know where all the volume was coming from, whether it was the whales or just individuals that were sitting on the sideline, boy, the transaction, not the transaction times, but the times to transfer, they just skyrocketed the amount of time, and the transfer fees skyrocketed just a matter of a couple hours, 3 or 4 hours. And
it could have been arbitrage trading or something like that, or people just transferred
it
from
across
exchange
the board
to exchange.
Globally,
yeah.
I know a couple different exchanges people were trying to move in.
The one good thing about this is we're still in early. This market's, if everything holds true, it's headed up. And once you start to get the big players in, and once there's some more stability in the markets and they consolidate, similar to the stock market, where you can buy off the American, you get the best price at that time across a variety of exchanges, that's when you're going to see more stability, and you're going to see, you're going to be able to see some of these larger investors come in, and they're going to buy it. I don't care what anyone says, they're going to buy it like gold. Bitcoin is digital gold, and I am sold on that. I mean, I've been a gold bug for years, and I can tell you right now that to me, when people go, oh, it's slow, it's this and that, I'm like, you know what?
Word before the break, Augie.
Go ahead, Augie.
I want a digital hug like gold, right?
I love digital gold. Hey, you are right, Augie. There's nothing better than holding real gold in your hand. Is there nothing better than holding gold in your hand? Absolutely.
Yes, there is. There's a lot of things you can hold in your hand that are better than holding gold. All right, let's take a break.
I've been divorced twice, Augie. Believe me, I'd rather have gold in my hand.
I'm turning two mics off right now. Taking a break. We'll be back with blockchain, and Karahas is going to straighten us out here.
Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Bite Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Bite Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Bite Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Bite Federal ATM near you. Go to BiteFederal.com to find a location for you. That's BiteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on The Henry Rain Show.
There's a new way to experience wellness. Hi, I'm Laura Alcover, owner and operator of Alcover Massage. We're the first business in Bradenton's Village of the Arts to accept cryptocurrency. Whether you use Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, or Litecoin, you can now pay for quality massage therapy using cryptocurrency at Alcover Massage. So if you seek medical massage or a relaxing session with light pressure, your session will be conducted by a talented therapist. You'll be glad you booked with us. Check out and like our Facebook page where you can book online in seconds. And remember to tell your friends. Give us a call, 941-592-3187. That's 941-592-3187. Alcover Massage, quality massage therapy in your neighborhood. MA number 50525, MM number 34081.
Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Running a little bit over today since we got a late start. And we have in the studio Augie, of course, and we have Andy, a.k.a. Goldbug1. We have
Henry. I'm glad to be here today.
Yes, we're glad to have you. And there's the rotating crew, crypto crew, that's out there somewhere doing other issues of responsibility. We hope to have back someday. But filling in, and not just filling in, much more than a fill-in, a guest, and adding a lot to the show today is Kara Haas, CPA, that is expert on advice for blockchain businesses, and she reads white papers on ICOs for fun. And
I do. Yeah, I do. I'm addicted. One yeah. a day.
Really?
So when you Kara, when you are someone comes to you and says, "I'd like to change the way I invest my money," and since you're in crypto, that's kind of risky, isn't it? What do you I've got $2 million here, and I'd like what would you do with some of that money?
What's Andy's website? I tell him to go there.
You would.
So I am definitely not a professional trader at all.
And you're not a professional investment advisor either.
No, definitely not a professional investment advisor. Eventually, we're going to get to what I do, I suppose. But
well, maybe you should tell us what it is and shortcut this.
No taxes, no investment advice. I just got with crypto, got my lessons in technical trading, starting with the candles for the most part. I'm still stuck in candle watching mode and volume. So that tends to be where I stay, and looking to advance from there. But essentially what I work on is all the Ethereum tokens in particular and some of the other applications that are built on the blockchains, what we know as the ICOs and the altcoins, the accounting for them. If you look at majority of the teams out there, there's rarely an accountant. Because I'm not under the illusion that we should be the number one priority. Even though I'm biased to that degree, there's a lack of accounting sense and urgency until it comes time to the end of the year or they need to go get more money.
So what would you do about that?
So what I do is team up with other CPA firms. If they have clients transacting in crypto and issuing ICOs, they likely don't have enough time to do the research necessary to find out how to account for these transactions.
So you're a researcher for that.
I'm a researcher for that. And then I also somehow over the years became an expert at how cashiers and employees steal and occupational fraud and abuse through retail point of sale systems. And I usually approach most software from what their vulnerabilities and weaknesses are as to how someone could steal from it. So I'm not as much into the hacking of cryptocurrency, but there's a generation gap, there's a technical gap between owners and employees right now that there's, I believe, quite a bit of cryptocurrency fraud, particularly Bitcoin fraud, going on within companies. That you could easily, and I don't want to divulge too much information as to how you could
you're hinting at all of that, meaning suggesting in my mind you have a value in your research as to creating a set of guidelines about where people can protect themselves and at the same time take some risk and go in particular directions and avoid certain problems.
Absolutely. And I work with the accountants where they can give that advice, and I just support them with the necessary research. I understand the blockchain. I can navigate it. I understand the multiple different currencies, when their clients may have done certain transactions, going through from fiat to crypto to token and back. And then, two, if they have something that doesn't seem right with their books and their clients' books, I can give them some advice as to how cryptocurrency might actually be a culprit in there and how they can instill better internal controls to prevent future theft or problems, hopefully deter them in advance.
In a way, you can be an advisor for an insurance company, if you will. It says, we will insure you.
Well, we're going to get into that as we go into the different things, industries for blockchain here, and I'm sure Augie remembers from a couple of weeks ago, to give emphasis to your point about employees, is the Korean cryptocurrency exchange that had one of their employees, they think, stole $2.5 million worth of something.
Yeah.
And they had to report them right to the Korean law enforcement. This clip here is from Colin Ellis of Moody's. He is their blockchain expert, I guess. At least that's what he was portraying himself as on CNBC. And we're going to get a little bit of his comments and use that as the launching point for Kara.
Most people are familiar with it in terms of the cryptocurrencies and all the wild moves you see there. But actually, the underlying technology where you essentially have this distributed ledger approach to reconciling transactions and positions across banks, across a network, really offers some quite exciting opportunities. I think the point of our report is, you know, whenever you see this kind of shock, whether it's technological or economic or policy shock, it's always going to be disruptive. You know, there are going to be winners and losers, and it's hard to pick who those winners and losers are going to be at this stage. But in some of the areas where blockchain could have an impact, like, for example, cross-border transactions and reducing settlement times and costs, or in terms of some of the payments that people make for banking services, you know, we can look at which banking sectors are more exposed there in terms of assistance, and that's really what we're talking about.
I wanted to ask a little bit, Colin. Look, I spend a lot of time looking at blockchain technology, and a lot of the times people are saying we're going to implement blockchain technology, but then I look at it and say there's no need for blockchain technology here, maybe just more of a complex database system. Why is blockchain technology useful for banks over perhaps just a slightly more advanced database system?
Well, I mean, in essence, you could say that blockchain is a slightly more advanced database system, but it does tend to be more robust because of the nature of the technology. You have multiple accounts kind of all coalescing and converging and being able to kind of self-verify in that way. It's better than some of the legacy systems that are out there. But we are seeing, you know, this isn't just a question of new fintechs and startups coming in and trying to sell this by themselves. We are seeing banks and even payment systems, infrastructure firms, investing in this technology as well, because it does offer the opportunity, particularly for quicker settlement times. You know, if you all start from the same place, you all have access to the same network. You know, it shouldn't take 3 days for something to come.
I'm going to hold it right there, because this is actually a topic that Andy got into a pretty extensive discussion with Lennart, the chief technical officer for Byte Federal, about what I think maybe I'll let you frame it, but the gist of it was Lennart was saying a database is sufficient. Andy was talking about the blockchain initiatives. Was it of IBM or was it just companies in general?
I think it was the companies in general, but yeah, it was we originally talked about Walmart and IBM's blockchain initiative, and I'll tell you what, Leonard stepped me straight on it. I mean, those of you that don't know Leonard, he's probably one of the smartest guys you'll ever meet, and he definitely made me think hard and definitely opened my eyes up to the difference between a database and a blockchain.
So, do you ever come to that, Kara? Because you must have dealt with databases before blockchain existed. Do you ever get to one of these companies that you're advising, and you're like, you really don't need blockchain to do all this? And then, on the other hand, let's reverse it. They're trying to make a database do something that you really need a blockchain for. Could you, like, illuminate that for us?
Certainly. So, at the moment, the problem is we seem to look at the forest before we look at the trees. On some of these cases where the blockchain sounds so promising and everybody wants to rush to the end result of where it can be before we've had the opportunity to experience scalability pains and make sure that we are moving our processes with the technology, where instead so many times we just try to take this end result and stuff our current processes into it. Or force them together. So there are definitely a lot of times, if you don't have a sound business model, if there's something not working with your business right now, chances are it's not going to work on the blockchain. Unless the blockchain hands down can solve whatever your problem is, and I have yet to see one that could save a family.
Is there
business.
An initial question you would ask somebody what they're trying to solve or what they're trying to do to decide if a blockchain might be appropriate?
So if they have a good handle on databases, that definitely does help. And being able to see what benefit, whether it be that it's decentralized and they need, but even the internet can take care of logistics and geography. So one of the biggest questions I have is how are you either going to gain consumers by moving your business to the blockchain, gain user adoption. If those things aren't readily available, I don't see a need, because it's a pain. It's an absolute pain to be able to transact on the blockchain right now. I mean, you might as well wait for 10 years or wait for Amazon and some of our bigger players to put a nice user face together for people to do it, but it's definitely not something to FOMO in from a business standpoint.
I just have to tell for the people in the audience that can't see the studio, which is everybody, just because it sounds good to Augie doesn't mean you're being validated by everything she says.
Of course not, Henry. Of course not.
I got his nod, and I'm just like, I think I'm winning.
I think he doesn't understand.
I think he understands too much.
So do you have a... I'm sure you don't want to reveal clients' names, but do you have like a case study of an example of where the answers were positive, and it was like, yes, this is something that would be a good enterprise?
So I won't use any personal to me, but I'll use some. I never trash projects, but if I'm in love with a project, if I have a crush on a project, I have no problem naming them. So a good example of one that I think is going to work well is Augur, without a doubt. The prediction markets, it's
tell us what Augur is.
So Augur is a decentralized prediction market where you can earn reputation coin as their coin for reporting on a bet or a derivatives market. It definitely is, I believe, going to...
And what type of markets can... Are you talking stock, sports betting?
So for the most part, I would say that it does have applications in the stock market. I am not a seasoned derivatives trader by any stretch of the imagination, but some of the examples down the road, and they have not launched yet. They're going to launch with a bounty, a bug bounty question. Will Augur be hacked? So that's the only thing, and then people will report on when it was hacked or if it was hacked. But going down the road, what they'll be able to do is someone in Singapore who wouldn't be able to buy Apple stock, that they could buy a derivative, is the way I'm understanding it, a derivative product, betting up or down in some...
Yeah, it's almost like it's almost like a betting against the weather. You know, like they have weather derivatives where you can actually, you know.
But I mean, well this goes back to the thing that already exists.
There's already websites
you can bet on everything.
I know, and I'm a big anti, you know.
Anti what?
Anti altcoin guy. I mean, there's certain altcoins I like. I like Wabi. I've seen Augur, and that was actually one that intrigued me, because what you can do there is you have a decentralized way to hedge against the weather or who's going to win a race or anything. It's pretty much a big gambling, almost. At least that's what I got from it when I read it.
It's gambling.
It's pretty much, she thinks it's going to be sunny tomorrow. I think it's going to rain, and we both put our money in there, and it is what it is. But for insurance companies and stuff like that, or, you know, for farmers that are growing crops, I mean, there's a lot of.
So this can scale up for an industry?
Absolutely.
I definitely believe that it can, and more along that line of its implications for the agricultural market or overseas investors who are not able to trade or buy the products that they want. Another one, I don't know that I'm doing justice to pronouncing it. It's Greek, Kleros, I believe.
Just ask Augie. He knows that kind of stuff. What is it, Augie?
What are you asking?
Kleros is another token project, an altcoin that I Kleros. Do... It's Kleros.
It's Greek. I know it's Greek, but it's Kleros.
There we go. I'm not even going to attempt to perfect it. No, not testing.
Well, that is
I'm going to take
you around. I thought he was just here for eye candy.
He, that's right, exactly.
Winking at you yet, Claire? That's all we need.
I don't need the flirt.
But he won me with Jamie Dimon. So that is an arbitration for smaller mediation type things with a smart contract. It's been a while since I read their white paper, but I know that they're getting ready to launch. The thing I like about them that stood out, there's no pre-sale. There's none of this bonus stuff. It's just, and there's a couple out there now that they're only offering their coins to people who intend to use their product. I think Virtue Poker may be somebody like that too, that those are the ones that I think at a minimum, if they show that they've had developers working on something, that this wasn't, oh, look at how much money everybody's raising, we need to come up with an idea. Anything that was worked on 2014, 2015, that either has something ready to launch or has launched, I can at least see the value in having something fundamentally to analyze. There's some, I can think of the extreme, like, worst cases where you do see the money grabs. That I hope they're not the only ones out there and everybody knows who they are, but they're not U.S. But an online dating app. And, I mean, putting online dating on the blockchain.
It makes you discreet, you know, and anonymous.
But how does...
Virtual dating, that's how it is.
Oh, mercy, but how are they solving the geography? I mean, I think about... the early days of eHarmony, and I was all but maybe four people in the state of Florida on the eHarmony, and I'm flying to Arizona. Now we're going global with it. And
why were you flying to Arizona?
To meet up with my person. It's been a long time since I did that. 29 points of compatibility. Obviously, it didn't work out because I'm not in Arizona.
I prefer that you just lie about yourself and try and make yourself as interesting and as attractive as possible.
Yeah. I go to the bar and find drunk women. That's what you do. You go to the bar and find drunk women. You know, everybody looks good at a bar.
You know, I have advice for people out there. I don't know if I should give it, but now that I've teased, I guess I got to give it. The advice for what you said is go ugly early.
That's right. Because then you won't go home alone.
And the person that I heard that from was James Carville, the political...
I love him.
And he was sitting next to his wife.
Oh, my God. Well, she went home, she took his advice, obviously.
You don't know who she might have taken his advice with before.
That's different.
All right, let's go back into something more profound, maybe, as far as the blockchain discussion. This is something that is near and dear to Andy's heart. By the way, if you go to SeekingCryptos.com, he's got articles up there, I believe, about blockchain companies. If you want to play the stocks of companies involved in blockchain, that's a thing we didn't get into on the recorded clips, Brian Kelly saying what stocks he would get into. So I'll have to speak for him after we hear from Andy in just a little while. But so there was this story that sparked a discussion in our top secret crypto texting group. Amazon wants to make it easier for developers to create projects based on blockchain technology underlying Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. The company's cloud computing division launched AWS Blockchain Templates. The product gives users preset blockchain frameworks that support two versions of the technology, Ethereum and Linux Foundation's Hyperledger Fabric. So have you followed this? And I should also say IBM, which also has a cloud computing service, is one of the leaders in the enterprise blockchain development. The company reported $5.5 billion in revenues from the cloud in the fourth quarter of last year. The same quarter, Amazon reported $5.1 billion in revenue for AWS.
And they're the proposed leader, right?
Well, I'd have to look at the sentence you're talking about.
They say Amazon is 5.1 billion in sales, and IBM had 5.5.
Well,
but if you listen to
revenue,
the street,
they
say, "Oh, AWS has got this largest."
Well, you're taking it out of context, just like any of us would be here, because it didn't say that. That's based
on
revenue.
If you're selling cookies, all right. If you're selling cookies and you're selling them at 10 cents a piece, and you say, "Hey, listen, I did 1 million cookies this year," and I say, "Okay, well, that's good. I only did 100,000, but I'm selling my cookies at $10 a piece. Who has more revenue?"
Maybe they're judging it by the number of customers, the
exactly
number of
what they're doing.
Projects.
Absolutely.
So we don't know.
But that's the whole point is, do customers lead
to
profits?
That's what Andy woke us up at 4 a.m. on the texting group this morning. Read the last two paragraphs.
And you know, and IBM's just not a blockchain play, and I just want to clarify that out there. IBM's a good company. It's a legacy company that has turned the corner, and I owned IBM back in the 90s and sold out.
It has blockchain exposure.
It has
for
blockchain
exposure,
so, and it doesn't has cloud, but they're a big company. They pay a 4% dividend. You know, the stock's trading at a 10 multiple.
I want to get directly to that, but let me just get Kara's opinion. Have you been following this with Amazon? And because you say you look at it, ERC20 and things built on that. What are your thoughts about Amazon getting into this?
Well, they're all in it, without a doubt. And now we're starting to see the official announcements. I mean, most of these bigger players have been. I think the ones that were a little bit more worried about their capabilities in the past started to announce sooner. Amazon, Google, Chase, the bigger names, they all have their products. I'm certain it's even ready, but they're...
And their patents.
And their patents, of course, with Amazon just getting awarded again, I think, another... So they're ready to go, and they've been working on it for quite some time.
So what does that mean to the small clients like you advise?
So to a degree, I think it's going to make it easier for clients who actually can benefit from operating on the blockchain, that they already have the user interface and the infrastructure that some of the bigger players can provide. I don't think that most of the smaller clients and most of the clients in the U.S., I don't think, intend to compete with Amazon or intend to compete with Google. The same as we still have plenty of independent retailers, that it's just a different ballgame than what Amazon is. So instead, it's providing, taking away some of that initial pain point that they actually do have a good idea, but they have absolutely no development support behind them whatsoever.
Yeah. So the clip with Brian Kelly that I'm not going to play, the panel asked him, what are his blockchain stocks? And he listed Square.
I love Square.
I love Square, too.
He listed Taiwan Semiconductor.
I love Taiwan. Yep.
But are these really the best blockchain plays?
Well, Square Square is not a value play. That's a growth play. So but they are making money. They turned a corner and made four consecutive quarters of profitability. So it's growing and the numbers are growing. So you're looking at a young Netflix maybe.
Talking about Square now.
Square, yes, absolutely.
Distracted by the ringing bell.
No, that's okay. Augie needs to answer her phone, but Square's that's more of a growth play, and I'm not into growth stocks right now at this phase in the market. So, but I do
and
like.
I'm the antithesis.
Yeah. Well,
because I've been in Square for like a year and a half.
Well, you were in early.
And I like the growth stocks. I'm not so much on the value plays like he is.
Well, don't get me wrong. I love growth stocks.
But I do the stock options, so it doesn't really help me for the dividends.
I like growth stocks, just not at this time in the market. We're getting towards the end of a cycle.
Tell Carla wants to say something.
Oh, go ahead, Carla. What do you think?
Do you think
we're at the end of the cycle?
So, no, I cannot, from a business standpoint, I cannot opine on anything investing-wise. But from a business model, I really like Square.
Yeah.
So, without a doubt, they're going from the payments backwards, where everybody else tries to go from the top down to payments. So, So I do like it from that standpoint. But, no, please go back to the investing. I can't apply
that. So what else? I agree with Brian so far, and I love Brian Kelly. He's one of the smartest guys.
Taiwan Semiconductor, is that a blockchain play or is that a crypto play?
Well, you have to take a look at it. It's a value play in the crypto space, and it does have blockchain exposure because NVIDIA makes Taiwan Semiconductor makes 56% of the world's wafers. So, I mean, if you're NVIDIA, you're using them. Apple, you're using them. Amazon, whoever's making chips, they're using them. So it's definitely a play there. So it definitely has blockchain exposure, sure.
Okay. Actually, by the articles we've been talking about, I would say not as a percentage of business, but as a future dominance in the blockchain industry, Amazon, Google, and IBM are better blockchain plays than Taiwan Semiconductor.
Yes and no. I mean, I'll tell you a story of a buddy of mine that lived out on the island, just sold his business recently, and they came in with the soybeans. They were talking a few years ago. This goes back about 8 years when soybeans were a big thing, and soybean market was going to go up. You know what he bought? He bought a fertilizer, some small fertilizer company, and he made I want to say he doubled his money 6 times, and then Warren Buffett came in and bought the company out. So you're looking at, you can either buy the soybeans or you can buy the companies that you need, that you, the companies that products you need to grow the soybeans. And that's the same with blockchain. Taiwan Semiconductors is the company that you need that's going to grow the blockchain. The more computing you need, the more chips you need. And that's why Taiwan Semiconductors is definitely a blockchain play, but it's not the only thing they do.
All right. What's coming up with Seeking Crypto stock?
I thought you were going to give me another stock there. Does he have IBM?
He didn't have a lot of. No, he didn't say IBM. But I did at the beginning of the show say the IBM play this week. So the day before the earnings were, well, the earnings were that afternoon.
Yes.
And I don't want to tell my trades, but it worked out both ways for me.
Oh, did you do a straddle?
It was more of a spread, but
okay.
But actually, I bought the calls at the beginning of the day, thinking I would buy the puts at the end of the day. That was my plan. And then the euphoria of IBM,
yeah.
It got so high, I wound up selling those, and then replacing everything.
I just tell you, they ran it right to. It was amazing. It ran right up to the line that we had put on there and posted. It said I think it was 170. I want to say it was. And went right to that line. I'm like, oh my God, I got to sell some calls against this.
And the thing is, then you know, I see where it goes after that and post market. I'm like, well, I'm going to make out tomorrow on the other side of it.
Yep, absolutely.
And I did, because it's like a once in a life, well, not once in a lifetime, once in a monthly or two monthly thing. But man, if I held longer, I would have tripled the once in a monthly thing.
Yeah. Well, you know,
But I have one that goes right to Taiwan Semiconductor.
ASML, that was disappointing.
Are you familiar with that ASML that does the lithography for the they make the equipment that the Taiwan Semiconductor and Samsung buy to make those chips.
Applied Materials?
Applied Materials does something similar, but but Taiwan Semiconductor and Samsung are big ASML people, and they both have overbooked ASML. Because they want to block the other one from buying the equipment. So anyway,
Apple did that actually.
But that was I've had stock in them for a long time. But the option play on it, you know, went on both sides of it. But it was the same thing. Great report.
Sell off after.
Yeah, and the it was a smaller.
Fundamentals do not drive market sentiment. Does people get all hyped up into
the
market?
Well, no, it's fundamentals because the analysts say there's smaller margins, even though they were booked up twice as much and for a year and a half.
Well, what fundamentally changed about them?
Smaller margins.
But how small?
2-3%. I thought it was. It's had a 50% run this year.
Exactly.
But the thing was, it was the same thing. You cash out. It's just one of those timing things.
Happens all the time.
But it does show. There is a stock I'll tell you off the air that ASML is buying the equipment from.
To make the stuff. There you go.
The
fertilizer, the soybeans. I love those kind of plays.
TBY.
Plays.
All right, so we really digressed here. Anything you want to leave the audience with, Carr?
I think I'm good to follow your lead.
And what a beautiful smile she has. I just have to say, Henry, she's been smiling the whole time, and Augie's just been staring. Just staring. Unpolitely staring.
We were flirting over pronunciations here.
I want to see her hit something.
I know. I'm like, damn.
You need to come to title.
Go to MMA.
We come to a term like KL Eros, then you come to a serious thing.
I've got a membership at Crunch. I got boxing gloves in my trunk. We can all come and see you hit the heavy bag.
Perfect.
Sounds like a winner.
Are you a kickboxer?
I am a kickboxer.
We'll find out after the show closes if that's just talk or
we'll
not.
We'll do one from the ring. A show there. We'll move the whole studio.
When I was going to college, I was a graveyard manager at Denny's. And real quick story. This big attorney in Sarasota was in there, and they were kind of being very
big
racist.
Or big
I mean,
successful.
A big, big guy. And they were being racist, and there was this Korean gentlemen, they were just minding their own business. And before I could move off where I was staying and managing the restaurant, before I could move over there, I seen this little dude get up. This big guy got up, turned around, and went, "You say something to me?" And this little dude, he could have been 4'6", did this flying kick and just flattened this guy's nose across his face. Blood was going everywhere. The cops were right across there eating breakfast. They jumped over. They arrested the poor little guy. I mean, you know. But I guess you're an attorney, you can be racist. You know,
you got to use the mic, Augie.
I'm sorry. Were they insulting him up front?
Oh yeah, they were definitely saying something, and so that's why I was getting ready to go over there and tell him he needed to shut up.
They were trying to provoke something. They succeeded, and he got arrested.
All right,
and
we'll
that's
be back
it.
Next
Margarita
week
Mondays
with another Henry Rain show, and some or all of the participants today.